You're listening to The Kat Business Show, and I'm Kat. Before becoming a professional speaker, trainer and coach, James Herford spent 27 years working in top creative agencies, including Saatchi & Saatchi, Ogilvy, J. Walter Thompson and Publicis, working on international campaigns such as British Airways, Barclays Wealth and Shell. So I've got on the line with me today James Herford from South Africa. He's all the way about 8,000 miles away in Cape Town. How are you today then, James?
Hello, Alison. Very well, thank you. Here in sunny Cape Town.
Is it sunny? How lovely. It's not very good here, I have to say. It's a bit overcast and a bit wintry, but you're actually getting into your summer now, aren't you?
We're just about to go into the summer, and the hottest time of the year is around Christmas and January and February in Cape Town.
Wow.
And it gets up to 40 degrees.
Oh, blimey, that's too hot for me. I think I'll stay over here. Well, how long have you actually been over there now, James? Because actually you've had a very successful career in London with top London advertising agencies and direct marketing before you went out there. So how long have you actually been in South Africa?
Nearly 10 years, Alison.
Wow.
I came out here in 2006, 2007, while I was still working at Ogilvy in Canary Wharf in London.
Wow. Been out there quite a while then, and I should think it's quite different out there to it was in the good old heady days of the London advertising scene that you worked in, which I must say must have been quite an experience, because it's very different now, isn't it?
Advertising's completely changed, Alison, over the years. I went to advertising after I left university. I went to university in Nottingham, straight down to London, and I joined J. Walter Thompson Advertising Agency in Mayfair.
Wow.
In the 80s.
Terrific.
That's where I started as a junior art director, and I ended up as creative director worldwide on British Airways at Ogilvy Advertising in London.
Wow. Now, that's a wonderful name to have in your portfolio, British Airways. So was that doing direct marketing or was that advertising? Because I know that you've worked in both of those arenas, haven't you?
I have. That was actually what they call through the line. It was both.
It was both. Bit of direct marketing, going all the way through the line up to advertising above the line as well. So that's incredible. Mm. So a real integrated approach to British Airways there. What kind of stuff did you work on then?
I worked on the British Airways Executive Club, which is their loyalty program, where they have the cards. They have the blue, silver, gold cards. Mm. And they came to me and said, we'd like you to head up British Airways for us. And I said, well, what's happening there?
Wow.
And this was during the time they wanted to change their corporate identity, you might remember.
I do.
And
I'm
they
that
wanted
old,
to change
unfortunately.
They wanted to change their whole corporate identity, and that only happens about once every 10 years.
Yeah, sure. What an opportunity.
And they asked me to do it, so I took it, and it was great fun.
So what did that entail then? Did you actually have to go through the positioning of the brand, or was that all the visual elements? Because I guess that this is with Ogilvy, was this when you were working with BA?
It was actually at Saatchi's.
Oh, this was Saatchi's,
It was M&C Saatchi that headed that up. It wasn't just the look of it. The look and design was done by a design company in London.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to do the positioning of the executive club below the line work.
Mm-hmm.
How it would relate and not lose the biggest British Airways biggest amount of customers was their business customers.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I think they had over 2 million.
Wow.
Business customers. It'd be even larger now. And they wanted to change their corporate identity from a British Airways that was a pitch as a worldwide airline that happened to be British Airways, rather than British Airways that happened to be a worldwide airline. They wanted to turn it on its head.
Got you.
Without losing their business customers, because they spent their most money.
Wow, so that's great. So they're actually repositioning the entire brand as well as doing a corporate redesign of the logo, etc. So how did you actually go about doing that? Was that research based in terms of making sure that they didn't alienate their customer base, and then from that finding go out and change what they were doing? Or did they have a very good clear idea of where they wanted to go to start with?
That's a good question. No, they didn't.
Mm.
They didn't. And they didn't know how to do it. That's why they came to us.
Great.
An ad agency. And they just knew they didn't want to lose their business customers because they were the backbone of British Airways. But they wanted to appeal to the man in the street.
Sure.
So how do they do that? So we had to do a lot of positioning and also presentations in London and New York, because the headquarters were London and New York. So there was a lot of flying out there to do it before we actually started on creative work.
Yeah.
That's what people don't understand really about advertising. I think it's just about the creative idea and how it looks. That's almost like the cherry on the cake.
Sure.
A lot of the thinking goes on behind the scenes about focusing a campaign, focusing where it's going to, who you're going to, why you're going to them. That takes a lot of work and a lot of time. And you're talking to business people. We're all talking to business people, small and large, medium and small business people. They've got to understand it's not just a creative idea. It's how you position it. Exactly. Who it's going to, who's going to buy it, before you actually do a headline, an ad, or anything like that, or how you communicate.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that. So how did you actually go about doing that? Was that, you know, research-based, or was that looking at the existing customer base that British Airways had and analysing the demographics, or how did you go about that?
We had to look at the existing customer base. As I said, they're the ones they didn't want to lose. Sure. There was over 2 million people at the time, and they were the heavy spenders, the business people. So we looked at demographics of exactly who they were, what they were doing, why they were spending, where they're flying to. And if anybody knows about demographics, we even got it down to the type of person we would be speaking to.
It's really interesting that I have to agree with you. I mean, a demographic part of it is actually when you're identifying your customer, it's actually an exciting part, isn't it? I mean, people think that that's just very boring to say, well, who is it? Let's just, put some measures around that in terms of their income or their, their net disposable income or what they're doing or where they live. But actually, it's their thought processes that are more important, isn't it? Especially for a brand like British Airways, I guess it's very much about getting and tapping into that loyalty, which is what you were trying to do with that program that you were designing, and that's getting in their head, isn't it?
Well, yes, it's actually understanding the customer. It's targeting who they are. And you actually say it's very important for British Airways. It's not just important for the large corporates, it's important for every business to understand who they're talking to.
Exactly.
Because there's a reason for that. The clearer your focus and who you're targeting, the better and more effective your advertising will be.
Absolutely. It's about talking to them in a language they understand, isn't it? So that they're responding to that in the way that you want them to do that. So that's a great starting point. So how did that translate then into a program that was actually creating the most of this loyal base, and as well as attracting new people? What did the program look like by the time you'd finished this work?
Well, they actually redesigned all their airports and the aircraft and all their literature. If you remember, they did a world art. They repainted all their fins of the airplanes.
They did, didn't they? That's right.
Yes. And they redesigned all the airports where British Airways was, the interior designs. Plus, they redesigned their above-the-line advertising and below-the-line advertising. So it was millions of pounds.
I think what's really interesting about that, I think, is what you've just said there about the fact that it translated more from just a visual aspect, but through to the actual customer experience now. So actually seeing that branding throughout the whole process, but also what you were saying there about the design of the lounges and actually what the customer experienced of that brand is equally as important, if not more important, really, isn't it, than just what they see.
Totally. Totally. It's advertising, direct marketing is just one part of it. The experience is probably the stronger part, really. It's how you make people feel. That's the customer experience. That is why they'll buy again, or won't buy in some cases.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's understanding that, isn't it, to make sure that that you tap into that. I mean, British Airways wasn't the actual only campaign that you worked on. You worked on an awful lot of campaigns, didn't you? I mean, in different sectors. I know you also worked on Barclays Wealth. I suggest that's probably quite a different kind of approach you took for that, because it was a different sector. What did you do for them?
Yeah, Barclays Wealth was with Ogilvy Advertising. And we did worldwide campaign to launch wealth management, really. Barclays discovered that a lot of new customers around the world were very wealthy. Mm. And like any big business, they want part of that money.
Absolutely.
So they wanted to position a sector of Barclays Bank at the wealthiest people in the world, not just in England, not just in the UK. They found that these people were very transient people. they lived on yachts. They had six houses around the world. That's how the world's changed over time. And they wanted to target the wealthiest people in the world.
Yeah, terrific. What was the campaign that you devised then to do that?
Well, it was based around Barclays Wealth, which is still going. Mm. And we had to not just do posters, press ads, brochures and everything else. Again, it's positioning. Mm. But all these campaigns we had to do had to be positioned to who you're talking to. Mm. And that takes up a lot of the time. As we said, just like British Airways, you have to understand who your market is. And they do actually tweak and change it as it goes along. They find out more about the marketplace and they tweak the ads to fit it.
And then how does it actually go about in terms of the creation process of a great advert then, James? Tell me about that. I mean, you've got an idea. How do you come up with that idea that's going to tap into that thought process that's going to attract this customer base to deal with you? What do you actually do to get in? Obviously, you've got an idea of what they are in terms of demographics, but how do you come up with those ideas?
Not what people think it is. People think... you've got to drink lots of alcohol or something like that to come up with creative ideas.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
that doesn't work at all.
No.
It really doesn't work. This image they have about advertising people is completely wrong. It is 90% perspiration, yeah. 10% inspiration.
Yes, that's true.
So you have to do a lot of reading, a lot of research and homework before you actually sit down and think of an advert.
Yeah.
And when I first went into advertising, Joe Walter Thompson, it takes about 10, 15 years to get really good at it.
Yes.
And then it's even hard.
Yes.
People think it's very easy to think of an ad. It's hard work. Mm. You just get more and more skilled as you go along to hit the target. How do we come up with ideas?
Mm.
Again, that's about focusing your thoughts. If the brief is good, and you have a direction, you can come up with ideas. And we always used to work, and they still do, in teams of two.
Yeah.
Because you need somebody to bounce the ideas off. Because sometimes you can think of an idea, you think it's great at the time, and you talk to your art director or copywriter, and you say it, and they go, oh, that's completely wrong, isn't it? Stupid.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, yes. Or he or she will come up with an idea. And you need a sounding board.
Yes.
And what you do is you have spurts of energy, of creativity.
Mm.
So when we were coming up with ideas, you had to write them down fast.
Yeah.
Very, very fast. You had to draw them very fast and put down the headline with a picture on a bit of paper. We'd work with a layout pad, an A3 layout pad or an A2. And as quick as we could think of an idea, you put it down fast, because
yeah.
Then you can go on to a next idea.
Yeah.
And after you've done about 10, 20 ideas, you pin them on the wall. And then you edit them.
And you hope out of all that there may be some nugget of excitement that you can work on, or use a bit of this and a bit of that and pull it together into something that's going to work.
Well, that's the framework of it, yes, but it takes a lot longer than you think.
Yeah.
if you're doing a really large campaign, one ad could take you a month.
Yeah, yeah.
People don't know that. They don't realise it. They think one ad will take you 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, I guess you have to go through that process a number of times, I suppose, don't you? You go through it once and then you may come up with a couple of ideas, but then you have to leave it a while and then come back to it and get some more inspiration. It's about tapping into that creativity, which isn't there all the time, I suppose, is it?
Quite. And also you've got other people in the team. You're not just working on it yourself. Something like Barclays Wealth, I think there was about 8 or 10 creatives working on it at the same time.
Incredible.
So you're all working on ideas at the same time, and within that time you're selling these ideas within the department and outside to Barclays himself.
Well, this is as well, isn't it? You have to also play that back to the client, don't you, and make sure that you're on track and fulfilling the brief properly, and then they no doubt will feed into that and it will come back to you, and you have to potentially redraft or start again, don't you?
All the time, we had to do it all the time. It's advertising was quite a labour of love, really. You get a lot of rejection.
Oh, I'm sure you do. So were there actually any key principles that you would work to for advertising, or indeed direct marketing, because I know that you did quite a lot of direct mail as well, didn't you? Were there certain principles that you had to work to in terms of, I don't know, a very clear headline? You know, was there a way that you were writing the copy, the colours and the imagery? How did that, gel together?
A lot of people don't realise that the most important thing about any type of advertising is to get attention. Mm. If you don't get attention in the first place, it doesn't matter how good your copywriting or picture is, nobody's going to see it.
Yeah.
It's the basic principle of advertising. You've got to be slightly different. You've got to catch people's attention. For example, how many times have you watched a series of TV ads and you can't remember what they're about?
Yes, exactly. Or you think it's somebody different to who actually was the person or the brand that put out the advert in the first place.
That's right. And in that case, it's a waste of money. Mm. And the same principles apply to small businesses and medium-sized businesses as they do to corporates. You don't want to waste your money on advertising and have nobody notice it.
Mm.
So you've got to think of something that attracts attention. It stops people and goes, oh, what is that? Tell me more about it.
Yeah, it's really tapping into that awareness part of that funnel, isn't it? Driving them through the sales funnel. And the advertising works really hard at the awareness part of that, doesn't it?
All the time. That's why we spent 90% of our time thinking of headlines, not writing copy.
Yes. Yeah. Good stuff.
It's the headline that attracts attention.
Sure. Yeah. And then you take them through the journey.
Mm. Yes. Yes. That's why you would put down ideas very quickly with pictures and headlines. And you wouldn't write copy. You just do pictures and headlines that work together to attract attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because we knew in advertising that that's the most important part.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get attention, once you've got a good headline and a good picture, or you've got a TV commercial, radio commercial, and it doesn't have to be radio, TV, anything like that, or press. It could be any idea mm-hmm. that attracts attention. It could mean dressing up in something that's different.
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, I've heard about you doing that on a Saturday night with your skirts.
Oh, thanks very much. Oh, well, at least I got attention.
Yes, exactly. Oh, but, this is really interesting, that attention part of it. And I guess that's what businesses are always trying to tap into, aren't they? And now you've actually moved from advertising and direct marketing and using those principles, I suppose, into what you're doing now, which is you're a professional speaker, obviously, on the subject in your training and coaching. But you're also tapping into the confidence element, aren't you, of how people and businesses can be more confident in what they do. What exactly are you doing now?
As you said, I'm a professional speaker, trainer, coach in Cape Town, in South Africa.
Mm.
And I train and coach small businesses small businesses and medium-sized businesses right up to the big corporates here in South Africa. I train at Old Mutual, Henley Business School, PricewaterhouseCoopers in Johannesburg. So still corporates, but again, same principles apply to small businesses as well. What I found was when the reason I changed the career was I did it for over 20 years in advertising, but I found a second career in speaking and training where I could use all the talents of advertising and selling. Mm. And that was that's why I'm doing what I do now.
Yes, I suppose because, you know, some great principles we've talked about there, but not all businesses have massive million-pound, budgets to throw at it, do they? But I suppose the principles of advertising and direct marketing and marketing in general can be translated into the small business world, can't it?
All the same. It's just that small businesses don't have millions of pounds to throw at it, so you have to be even more focused and give more thought to it, where you're going to spend your money. It's like if you take a shotgun and use that like in marketing, you spread it everywhere, mm-hmm. you're going to hit nobody. The thing is, you have to focus it more like a rifle and go for people you're after. We were doing that for the corporates, and small businesses have to do it as well. You have to know your market.
I guess that's the challenge, isn't it? I think you're absolutely right, but it's about knowing who you're going to fire that rifle at, isn't it? That's the hard bit.
Well, that's why you need a coach. That's why I coach small businesses, because they come to me and they need a sounding board.
Yes.
It's very, very hard, especially if you're a solopreneur, as we call them, working on our own, it's very hard to see the wood for the trees. But if you get a coach to help you as a sounding board, it could be somebody who's been in business, and different type of business, could be somebody in your family, somebody can bounce ideas off to focus your thoughts, it's going to be a lot better.
Yes, I suppose it's a little bit like you're working in those big teams in these agencies where you're working your team with a copywriter and an art director. But then, as you said, there were more people working on the account than just that. And more brains are better than one, aren't they? So sometimes it's best to sit down, work through the ideas with someone who knows a little bit more than you.
Exactly. And it actually goes further than that. The reason like these large corporates go to ad agencies is because when you're working in a company for yourself or a large corporate, you're too close to what you're doing.
Yes.
You can't see the wood for the trees. That's why they'll use ad agencies. Ad agencies are very good at helping companies focus what they're doing in their advertising. But here's a funny thing. They're terrible at doing it for themselves.
Yes, it's the old busboy's holiday
terrible.
Bit.
Exactly. So if you take that principle, if you're a small business person, you've really got to get a sounding board to bounce ideas off outside of your company. That could be a mentor, a coach, or somebody you've known in business or a different type of business that you trust and respect. So you get the different view on what you're doing.
I can see how that would work very well, to be honest. You've also written books, haven't you, on this subject? You've done 3 publications, I understand, about confidence and speaking and writing. In terms of how all those things gel together, is it about making sure that you get all the different ingredients and they work together well? When you've got an idea in business or trying to make something happen, how do you decide on which bit you need to fix?
Confidence. I call myself the confidence doctor. If you don't have any confidence, you can't achieve anything, can you? And confidence, the more confidence you have, it means you can take action because you're not scared of failing. That's why I train confidence. And not just in confidence, it's confidence in speaking, confidence in writing, confidence in advertising, selling.
That's interesting. Now, how do you get confidence in those things? Because I know a lot of people do have problem with these particular areas of speaking and writing and just generally communicating, don't they? How do you get that confidence?
you build it block by block. It's baby steps, Alison. You can't muster and be the most confident person in the world in a day. You build it in blocks. You build it over time. You build it by not stretching yourself too far, but stretching yourself a little bit every time.
Interesting. So is that about getting the right environment in which to work, or is that about working on your own skill sets?
It's actually working on yourself. It's an internal game, isn't it? Confidence is something that's inside you, and being self-confident, it projects outwardly. So you have to work on yourself every day.
Yeah, that's interesting. So do you work with businesses, first of all, from the person who's running the business to start with, maybe the management team, maybe the solo person, as you were talking there? Do you deal with their confidence first and then translate that into a business confidence? Is that how the process works?
No, I don't do that, actually. No, I don't just sell it as confidence. It's usually they come to me with a specific problem. Like, we need our presenters to be better presenters.
Right.
And confidence is just part of it, you see.
Right. So what you're actually doing then is giving them the tools in which to equip themselves to do the speaking or writing better. And then out of that process, because they're doing it better, they're building their own confidence, which in turn then helps them speak and write better?
Exactly. You can't. It's very difficult to sell something like, yes, you need confidence, because people don't know it.
No.
It's only when you are, when somebody says, well, we need our presenters to present better, to speak better, but they're so nervous when they're speaking in front of a client. And once you train them for, say, a few days, they realise, oh, it's about self-confidence. But you actually don't, they don't see it in the first place.
No, I can see that. And also, I guess it's also to get that confidence in the first place, the process you need to go through is really very much one of preparation and being, you know, the old adage of, you know, prepare to fail, prepare to fail. So about making, you know where I'm coming from. But, you know, that preparation is so key, isn't it? If you have that preparation to start with, then hopefully it's going to give you a better result that builds your confidence, that gives you a better result, and so on and so forth. Is it that kind of thing?
No, it's not, Alison.
Oh, right. Okay, tell me more.
It is more to do with practice. It's practice, particularly speaking, well, writing, it's all these things, really. It's the more you get it, the more you do it, the more you practice it, the better you get.
Sure.
And it's a case of practicing all the time and building and building. For example, becoming a good speaker, presenter, actually takes a few years. And you can't learn it by reading from a book. The same with advertising, selling and marketing. You have to do it. Okay. We all learn by doing. And that's why I train people. When I'm training speaking or even advertising, I get people to speak. I get people to do things, to produce ads, to sell, to practice. And then they realise where they're going wrong. And then you can tweak it and tweak it every time. So I'm more like a facilitator, a guider. So he guides people in the right direction.
Brilliant. So people are actually tapping into all these years of knowledge that you have, and then you're giving them principles and guidelines to go away with, and after the event of the coaching that you've given them, to go away and become better businesses as a result of that.
Well, yes. And also, you see, they come back all the time. It's not, you can't just train in 2 hours and they change everything.
No.
It'll be a session of 6 weeks, of 2 hours a week, over 6 weeks.
Sure.
And then every time they go away and practice these things back at their business, they learn a bit more and they come back again.
Yeah.
Then you can tweak it again. That's building confidence and building direction. So it's a process.
It's not something that happens overnight, as you say. It's building blocks and practice. Brilliant. Now, if somebody wants to actually engage your services, obviously in South Africa, they can do it face-to-face with you, can't they? Do you also do Skype for people who want to maybe do that from an international point of view?
I've got clients in the UK, of course, and across South Africa. South Africa's a huge country, and you can coach somebody. I'm in Cape Town, and somebody will be in Johannesburg, and that's 2 hours away by flight. So I coach and train face-to-face as well as on Skype and FaceTime.
Terrific. And where can people get hold of you then, James, if they want to engage your services?
Quite easily. Mm-hmm. I call myself the Confidence Doctor.
Terrific.
And you can find and look me up on www.theconfidencedoctor.co.za.
Brilliant. And of course, you're on Facebook and Twitter and all the LinkedIns and social media and all that kind of stuff as well, aren't you?
Definitely. LinkedIn's a big one.
Brilliant.
I have a Facebook page which is called The Confidence Doctor. WhatsApp,
terrific.
Twitter, all those, all the big ones, actually. I focus us on three of the big ones, not every bit of social media, because it takes too much time.
It certainly does, doesn't it? Well, do you know what? That's been very interesting indeed, James. Thank you so much for spending the time talking to me today, and good luck with it all. It sounds wonderful and an exciting world that you're working in, and not quite the heady heights of the 80s in the advertising world with the champagne dinners where you're coming up with all those ideas. But it's all changed, and it sounds fun.
Well, it was the 80s, loads of money, wasn't
loads
it?
Loads of money.
Lanny, but... it's just as interesting, if not better, doing what I'm doing now. The people still have the same challenges as they did when they're doing advertising.
That's true.
People still need to sell and promote themselves and get me business.
Exactly.
The same principles, they'll never change, actually, those principles about selling. They'll always stay the same. It's just the types of media that changes.
And the different channels that you're using to communicate through. Brilliant.
There you are.
Well, thank you very much, James. It's been an absolute pleasure, and let's do it again soon.
Great to talk to you, Alison, and I hope you all got something out of that.
Lovely. Thank you very much. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cat Business Show. For more information about me, my business school, and to listen to past shows, please visit cat.uk.com. Bye for now.